I'm not even sure what to say. That was, I'm speechless. Beyond speechless. Publisher, we just talked about this a second ago before going on air. What the hell just happened?
It was definitely a wild night.
Yeah, this Triple H took the ring, took the ball, whatever, and just held it over his head and said, "Take it from me, I dare you."
That's a fact. I mean, it's been such a
WWE
shift.
WWE just won, in my opinion, and they're continuing to win. Obviously, let's just get right into it. Bray Wyatt's back officially. I don't know how to sum up his return other than that was Bray Wyatt 100%, and I'm all for it. What do you think? What did you think about one of the biggest free agent signings in the past 20 years, if not ever?
Perfect. I don't think that they could have done it better, honestly. The way that they pulled it off, at first I was a little annoyed just because it's such a tease, you know, and just going in, you know, having that anticipation and thinking, you know, is this, you know, going to be it? Are we finally going to, you know, see Wyatt come back? You know, because I don't think I was 100% sold. I feel like the vignettes and things like that kind of got me, you know, more sold than I was before. But I don't think that, you know, like you said, just what just happened. Like, I'm actually excited to probably watch Raw this week. I mean, I honestly don't watch a ton of wrestling live and, you know, whatnot. You know, it's just, you know, there's something to it. Like, and we talked about it in our last episode with Triple H taking over, you know, and changing things up. Like, it's absolutely changed the ball game. And with where AEW's been in the last month or so during this whole time frame with the Bray Wyatt, the lead up and the return, it's the dynamic in the professional wrestling landscape has just changed 360. And like I said, I don't think you could have done it any better. You know, rethinking it, watching it a couple of times now, just the lead up into exactly, you know, how they played that out, going back to the Funhouse, and just tying the whole character together. I think the new mask will grow on me. I didn't love it the first night, but you know, you had to do something different.
Yeah, you did, you know, and just kind of, yeah, I'm not sure how all these characters are going to play in together, you know, and I guess that's what we'll see as time progresses and he kind of gets a chance to come on shows and do whatever he's going to do. But it's very obvious that he brought back the Wyatt family, Bray Wyatt. It's pretty clear that that is coming back along with, I'm assuming, from what I read initially, when everything had kind of started, it was in the contract of a four-character deal to where he was going to have four different characters. Now, whatever those four characters are, it's obviously still remains to be seen, but it obviously looks like Wyatt Family Bray Wyatt with a mix of The Fiend and whatever the hell those other things were, looks to be a mix of the two. But
fascinating.
You know, it's just, again, I hate to repeat myself, but it just goes back to, it took one guy to make a changing of the guard, yeah. And now you're easily the best wrestling promotion in the world. Not that they weren't already, but if you forgot, you know.
Yeah, it's like replanting that flag almost tonight, especially mm-hmm. just because how game-changing tonight was. You know, we talked about it just, you know, through text, talking about while we were watching it, just how good the show was, top to bottom, really, and how electric the crowd was. And I think a lot of people forget how important the crowd is for wrestling. You know, when you have people excited, especially at a live event excited, you know, there's nothing better than, you know, a huge pop, a huge moment. I mean, think about how many moments are just almost made off of just the pop that it received. I mean, you know, the Bray Wyatt thing, you know, the pop it received, like when he turned to the camera and, you know, I'm not exactly sure if he said, "I'm back," something like that. You know, you couldn't even hear him. You literally could not hear him.
I've never heard anything like
it. Yeah.
It was the loudest pop I've heard. It was rock-esque. It was Stone Cold-esque. It was huge. And I mean, I don't think people really understood just how big Bray Wyatt was. But now you get it. You know, I mean, Bray Wyatt is the biggest star in wrestling.
And I think you could be right. And it's crazy to think about, you know, everything he's been through, the up and down road that Bray has seen to this moment, because you might absolutely be right. And really, the two hottest stars in wrestling in the last year, the way that they have, I think, kind of jumped on that stardom is, you know, obviously with Cody Rhodes is who I'm talking about, along with Bray Wyatt. With Cody, it's a lot different. You know, he left, he made a name for himself, then he made his return anticipated, just like Wyatt did, and the way that they got there, and the pops that they received, you know, WrestleMania, and then this Extreme Rules, just the way it was set out. I mean, I think, you know, moments like this is what makes, you know, I think, I don't know, like the biggest star in wrestling could be anyone at any given moment is kind of what I'm trying to get to. And they have, you know, even like when CM Punk came back with AEW, you know, him being away for so long, the, you know, just hunger to want to see him wrestle, to perform, to be back in that element. And then especially with this, with Bray Wyatt, I mean, think about how many times, you know, WWE creative has tried to kill Bray Wyatt, essentially. Maybe inadvertently, but just through the years, and it's only made him bigger, more popular, and better for it, really, because, I mean, every hiatus he's had from TV, whether, you know, he was, you know, under contract or not, it has just made him bigger, a bigger star.
It has, you know, I mean, it really has made him, I'm trying to think of the word, Undertaker-esque.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Yeah, it has that same allure to it, to where you take someone off TV and you want that situation. And now that I'm thinking about it, that's actually probably more of a better analogy. It was a very Taker-esque pop for Bray Wyatt. You know, that's huge for them. They were talking about, I mean, just talking about contracts in general. We'll talk about this and we'll get right onto the pay-per-view itself. But they're talking about contracts. We'll switch over to wrestling world and just general. Jon Moxley had a huge contract signing with AEW, so obviously he's not going anywhere. But, you know, just how do you feel about the landscape of contract wrestling? Because apparently there's a rumor that another star who WWE lost is coming back now. We talked about this a couple times. But Jon Moxley put a stake in AEW, and that's where he's going to stay. How long do you give AEW before WWE doesn't buy them out necessarily, but basically says, these are our guys, here's the checkbook, good luck? You know, how long do you give AEW before it's kind of... Tonight just kind of felt like Big Brother stepping up and finally just letting little brother have the run, but, you know, playtime's over. How long do you give AEW, or do you think AEW fights back from this?
I think they fight back. I think, though, I'm not sure exactly in what way, because I... You know, one thing about AEW, I mean, I think that their checkbook's pretty long, too, with the... you know, the cons and everything that they can put forth to build that. But at the same time, you know, realistically, I mean, WWE is the, you know, like in the 90s with WCW and WWE, there was no way WWE could compete with, you know, WCW and Ted Turner and the money that he had compared to WWE. But since then, you know, WWE has turned into a, you know, I mean, they're a public traded company. You know, they, you know, as long as the investors are rolling in the money and, you know, things are going all right, and right now things are way up, I mean, literally anybody could be yours right now. If they're not under contract, obviously, Dean Ambrose, I always want to call him Dean Ambrose, but Jon Moxley is not, what's, you know, he's not going to want to jump ship. And I don't think that there's a ton of people. I mean, over there, I mean, at the top of the card right now for AEW, I don't think there's a ton of people that are ready to just jump ship or would want to. So I do think they fight back. I think they fight back with their programming and stuff. And, you know, I haven't kept up with them a ton the last couple of weeks, as much as I wanted to, just seeing how they combated the whole situation with the suspensions and CM Punk and, you know, hearing CM Punk likely won't ever return. And that's probably it for CM Punk in wrestling at this point.
It's probably good for AEW in the biggest frame. And I said this on the last one we had, but, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, you know, sure. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you.
Yeah.
Punk just kind of fooled everybody with the whole, you know, them against me story. It's kind of obvious, dog, that it was you. So, you know, I mean, it sucks because Punk was such a big character, but, you know, it's just time to go. You know what I mean? You're older anyway. You obviously drain a lot out of the locker rooms. You know, just let it go. Wrestling's in such a good spot right now. You know, I don't think we need a guy like CM Punk anymore. Not that he isn't one of the best ever, but, you know, you just don't need it anymore.
Yeah, I agree. And honestly, with his showing, I think, really kind of, to me, post-matches and things like that, and the injuries that he sustained now, and his really relatively short return, I don't think that, you know, I don't think he was ready to come back full-time. Or, not that he wasn't ready, just I don't think that there was ever going to be a time where you get a full-time CM Punk, you know, back in wrestling, and to be, you know, that guy, to be top of the card, to be leading the charge of your promotion in AEW. And, I mean, I don't know if they planned like that. It kind of seemed like they wanted that, but I don't think that it was ever going to be that. And I think that, you know, just his body language and the way he seemed, he seems like he's done, I think, too, to a point.
I think he is. I think you nailed it on the head. I think he is done, too. And I think it's just a both parties decision at this point. You know, so whatever happens, happens. But, you know, CM Punk's gone is not the end of the world for any wrestling, because I think AEW, you know, like you said, is in good hands. But, you know, like we talked about, if WWE puts on shows like this, which now we'll get into the whole show in general, I mean, for the first match, they just beat the living holy hell out of each other for 15, 20 minutes. You know, I think WWE says that all the time. Oh, they beat the holy hell out of each other. No, they literally beat the hell out of each other. 40 minutes, and that set the tone for the whole night. But what was your overall take of it? I was a little ahead of you on watching it, but that was just, it was fucking awesome.
Yeah,
watching six guys beat the hell out of each other,
and that group of guys, Pete, or not Pete Dunne, what do we call it? Butch,
yeah.
Butch, Sheamus, Ridge Holland. And then Walter on the other, or no, fuck, he's not Walter anymore.
Gunther,
yes.
The third guy is newer.
Yeah.
I haven't nailed his name yet.
But the name changes kill me, man.
that's stupid, but.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know, well, I'm sure you did, but the ability and the storytelling to keep Sheamus and Gunther away from each other until a certain point, to where it was, everyone was down, but Sheamus got up, took out Kaiser and the other, and then it was just him and Gunther in the middle of the ring. That is the difference between Triple H and Vince storytelling.
Yeah.
Right there. You know where the story is supposed to go, so get it there. But get it to where it has that climactic point. And that's exactly what they did in that match. And it was beautiful. You know, it was a perfect physical match that got Sheamus over. How over is Sheamus right now? I mean, my God.
In 2022, did you think you'd ever see that again?
That's the most over he's been in 10 years.
It's a fact.
And not that he doesn't deserve it.
Right. But it just goes to show. It just goes to show what they can do and how much star power they really have. I think that that's another thing we forgot over the years is how much star power WWE possesses. Because, you know what, just 2-3 years ago, we're looking at Sheamus like, ah, oh, it's Sheamus, you know. And, you know, at this point, we're, oh, right, this is Sheamus. Like, you know, he is still, you know, a top-notch wrestler and has star power and definitely value. And this card up and down, like, just like you're talking about, there's such a difference. And I think it's just, you know, new life being breathed into the company from a guy that's not worn down from the, you know, just like the political, like, you know, financial landscape of, you know, being a shareholder, you know, things like that, you know, with Vince being the owner, moving into the publicly traded side during his time and, you know, kind of getting away from the more wrestling. Obviously, you don't want to call them wrestlers, call it a, you know, all of that kind of stuff just over the years to try to make the company as valuable as possible, which is, you know, understandable, but definitely Vince let it get in the way of how he ran the business. And with Triple H coming in, you know, I mean, he's not far removed from being an on-screen character, active wrestler, all these things, you know, so I think he can take it directly from his career and into a new career of, you know, helping, you know, with creative and doing things that are really going to help the company. And that was a great one. I just, while we're on the topic, I'm going to jump forward a little bit just to real quick for the Judgment Day.
Yeah.
Edge versus Finn Balor. That match is another one that, to me, like you said, the storytelling of the match in that first match, the storytelling of this whole story and how long this has gone on is what a difference, right? Mm-hmm. What a difference to have a story I'm not tired of and that's gone on this long.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, obviously Triple H had to come in and fix it. There were some holes in it that weren't very good. The Judgment Day was kind of ruining Finn Balor, but the point of bringing Finn Balor into it was to bring Finn Balor back, but it was actually hurting him more than it was. There was a point where they hadn't been on TV for a month. You know, so Finn Balor and Judgment Day, but what Triple H did tonight, and who knows how many other people have a hand in this. I'm sure there are a lot of other different people. But Triple H, what he did tonight was made the Judgment Day the most hated group on the roster, which is what he needed to do, and then made Finn Balor the biggest heel on the roster.
And at this point, he's definitely the leader of the Judgment Day.
Yeah, mission accomplished. You don't have to wonder who the leader is.
Yeah.
You don't have to wonder who the biggest heel is. They did all that. And that pop, and I think we're going to get it, and I didn't really realize I wanted it until the fans just went ballistic, the Beth Phoenix Rhea Ripley stare down.
Yes.
I was like, ooh, this would be a good match. Oh, that would be a great match. Actually, I want to see this match. You know, Rhea Ripley versus Beth Phoenix, I mean, come on, and that sounds awesome. You know, Beth Phoenix looks pretty good. I mean, you know, I think she's early, mid-40s, you know, a couple of kids, but she looks good. You know, and I think she had a match or two and she didn't look too bad, you know, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure she could do a 20-minute match, no problem.
Yeah, I agree. And she's, like you said, been a little active, but she didn't have the longest career ever. So I think that's kind of an added advantage too. Sometimes you see with wrestlers, they're, you know, run that they go, you know, on initially. And take time away and come back. Even Edge, I mean, Edge had a lot longer of a run, obviously, but, you know, maybe he's benefited from having a lot of time off instead of being, you know, kind of an intermediate guy, you know, like coming in and have a few matches a year. But, yeah, I mean, like you said, they made Finn Balor the biggest heel in the company tonight. And shout out to Michael Cole. Because I saw a thing not too long ago about how, you know, he's doing the best work of his career and not getting enough credit for it. And tonight, I feel like he made me think of Jim Ross.
Yeah, Michael Cole put over that match perfectly. He put over, you know, Ray getting beat up by Dominic. He put over
that's
Dominic
your father.
Yeah, getting kicked in the nuts by Edge. Yes. Michael Cole put that over very well. He put, and I loved the mob mentality at the end with the concerto to Beth Phoenix.
Yeah,
you know, you kind of saw it coming, but you didn't. And you know, Rhea Ripley, how great has she been in this new role? You know, she looks at Edge and says something rather or another, and just smashes Beth Phoenix in the head. You know, I mean, that was beautiful. You don't get much better than that. And it does continue the story, but it's a new aspect to it. So all in all, it was not perfect, but it was damn near close. You know.
And you didn't have your world champion on this card.
Right.
Or Brock Lesnar.
Right. No Brock Lesnar. No Roman Reigns. You know, and that's still one of the best shows of the year.
Does it not show how misused some of this talent has been over the last couple of years?
That too. One match, and this was, we kind of were skipping around a little bit, but one match that I'm just not sure was Liv Morgan, Ronda Rousey. You know, not sure how you totally feel about that. I liked that they were selling Liv Morgan needed the bat to really kind of help her against Ronda. But at the same aspect, it didn't hit for me, you know? And this has kind of been the issue with Liv Morgan matches. They're just not hitting like they should. And obviously, I think that's why she lost tonight. You know, they seem to be a lot of botches that shouldn't be there. And I know Ronda's not the best non-botch wrestler. She's had a lot of them. And there were some few tonight that were on her. But it just seems like Liv wasn't as ready as they thought. You know, and not that she wasn't doing good, but tonight just kind of showed she wasn't as ready. I don't know if that's what you took from it. But for me, I took it as Liv just wasn't quite ready. So we're going to give it to someone who's at least been there and can do it. And Ronda, that seemed like the business decision on Triple H's mind, is from what I took out of that.
Yeah, I could totally see that, because with Liv, I'm definitely a Liv Morgan fan. I liked the Riot Squad. I kind of liked what they had going. And so like through that, obviously she's the only one that made it out of those three. But I've always been kind of a fan of Liv Morgan's, and I think you're right. I think that she just wasn't ready, because I feel like all of her matches, it's like I want to believe and I want to, you know, I don't know, be more into it. And it seemed like tonight, like you said, it was weird, clunky. And then I hated the pin at the end when she went for the pin after she put Ronda through the table. And she rolled her up, and I was like, why is she doing that? And then she puts her in the armbar immediately after. I'm like, oh, my God. That was literally just for the armbar.
I noticed that, and I was like, man, well, this isn't over then. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, you know, not that she's not good at her job. She is. She's a good wrestler. But, you know, there's spots where you know where to set it up and where not to set it up, you know, and I think their goal here was they promoted Charlotte Flair earlier tonight. We haven't really seen much of her lately, but I would guess that Charlotte would probably be coming back to SmackDown, I would assume, at some point, and I would assume Ronda getting the title is going to aid that. Not that I want to see Ronda out of Charlotte Flair again, but I would imagine that's where we're going with it. But, yeah, Liv just not ready. It was obvious tonight. And again, I'm a Liv Morgan fan as well, and I think a lot of people are. But if you're a Liv Morgan fan, you have to know that tonight wasn't it.
Yeah.
You know, and it showed, unfortunately, in a big way.
Yeah, I agree. I think that even the Becky Lynch stuff was a little bit, you know, I thought it was really good, but it was also still a little bit, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I think she's not ready for the top of the card yet. Do you think she gets to the point where she is ready for the top of the card and a real a nice lengthy title run at least?
With that stuff, I don't know. You know, and again, not that this is a knock on Liv Morgan, but WWE is on a rocket ship right now. So if you ain't there, then you know you ain't on it. So
yeah, because they're definitely showing the willingness to try to promote people and, you know, really push people and see, okay, what do we got here? You know, let's see. You know.
Yeah. So I mean, can she come back and be, you know, a champion for a while? I think she can, but you know, I think she's gonna have to do what Mandy Rose did, or is doing. You know, they took Mandy Rose out, put her in NXT, and they're putting her as, you know, the top, you know, female wrestler in NXT, and she's done a good job with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they unified the UK title and the NXT women's title to her. You know, so I think they're going to have to kind of repackage Liv again, but I think that is a project that is later down the road. Because I think WWE has more interest at hand at the moment. And there's still a little uncertainty if Sasha Banks is coming back. That could be another thing of it, too. I don't think they really saw Sasha Banks, Liv Morgan as a great match. They saw Sasha Ronda as a better opportunity, which I'm not a huge fan of Sasha, but I agree that is a much better match than Sasha Liv.
I did see Sasha in one of the vignettes, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just showing that, you know, they're on screen, or, you know, she's on screen. So, I mean, you know, probably points to that. I'm honestly surprised that her and Naomi haven't come back yet. I thought for sure that they would come back around the time that they did the women's tag title tournament. I thought they'd either pop up in the tournament or right after. But
well, I read that Naomi may not be coming back. From what I understand, apparently that whole situation was too much for her. But Sasha Banks may be coming back. So who knows with that? WWE's been doing a good job of keeping their secrets. We'll keep it on the women. That ladder match between Bianca Belair and Bayley, it was a little clunky too. But towards the end, it showed that those two are two of the best wrestlers on the women's roster, and it got really good at the end. I'm a little surprised they didn't let Bayley win.
I was literally going to say the wrong person won.
I agree. I think the wrong person won, because you just gave Damage Control the women's tag titles, give her the belt, and then let them do basically, you know, what the Bloodline's doing now. But
yeah.
You know, maybe there's something else that's added to the storyline that we just don't know yet. So who knows? But I think Triple H, you know, even though he's gotten a lot of it right, every now and then he's going to miss. You know, Damage Control didn't win the tag titles on the first chance they could. You know, so who knows? But I will say I did like this match as it went on. I think it just kind of got a little clunky at the beginning. They weren't really sure how to use the ladders, but they figured it out mid-match and ended up being, you know, a typical good Bayley match.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought it all hit, just other than the who won. And like you said, maybe this is a play on, you know, some type of storyline. We'll see down the road exactly what, you know, they were going for here. Or, you know, see the storyline progress. So I'm intrigued, but I do feel like a heel faction like that, you want to build up more than you break down. And just like you're saying about the tag titles too, and, you know, then Bayley missing out on this opportunity, maybe it adds fuel to the fire. That's kind of what they're going for storyline wise. But I definitely think, you know, just like you said with Roman Reigns and, you know, the Usos and Sami Zayn. I love that. Sami Zayn is in with all that, but you know, just with the bloodline and what they're doing there, I think that you want to build up a heel faction. I think it's more important to build up a heel faction, you know, being strong and as strong as they can in the beginning to really build it, because than a face. Because if you're building up a face faction, you know, it's more so, you know, you want to see that, you know, struggle and climb. And I think for the heels, you're kind of wanting to build something that seems unbeatable. This, you know, unstoppable force is taking over. And so we'll see. I mean, other than that, though, like we've been talking about all night, I just kind of thought about that 6-man tag match at the beginning. And they set this up like one of those old WCW cards back in the day. We didn't get cruiserweights kicking off, but we just got a, you know, we got a brawl. We got a, you know, a fight. We got a fight in the first match. Exciting, you know, and they kind of paced their, or tried to pace themselves, you know, all the way through. And I think they did a very good job of it.
Yeah, I think they could have placed the Liv Ronda match different. Putting it second, I don't know if that was the right spot for it. But I think
in theory, I agree with you. But for what it was out there tonight, I think it was a good placement.
Well, you beat me to my point. I think Triple H knew that was where it needed to be. An interesting. What did you think of the strap match? You know, and I've heard Triple H is going to go a little more heelish wins and victories, like AEW does. But how did you feel about that? And I liked the start. Thought the start was good. Maybe I'm just not into Karrion Kross as much as other people are. But to me, you know, I feel like McIntyre needed to win that. But you know, I think kind of adds another way to it. It kind of feels like the Seth Rollins Riddle rivalry, where someone needed to win, but you gave it to the other person, so now you have to continue it. But you know, kind of where do you go from a strap match? You have to go Hell in a Cell or something like that. You know, so do you have a 2-match series where it's brutal match to brutal match? I would guess it's where they're going with this, but it was fine. You know, it wasn't a bad match, but the ending was kind of weird. But you know, overall, you know, a thumbs in the middle for me on that one, I would say.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I'm not a big fan of strap matches, period. Usually, anything kind of tying the you know, the two combatants together, I'm just not big on. I remember at the beginning thinking about strap matches, and I was thinking about the dog collar match, you know, which was a great match. And I don't mean that I can't enjoy them, but I just generally, you know, I'm not a big fan of the stipulation. But I did like how they did it in the beginning, like you said. I liked how Karrion Kross kind of was messing with him, didn't want to, you know, put the strap on his wrist. I also like the one thing I do like is when somebody has somebody outside, like Scarlett was, to be able to kind of interfere with the strap match like that or something. I think that always gives it a good, you know, flair to it, just because how she pulled to start the night, you know, like, I guess not start the match because it wasn't started yet, but for her yanking on it, for Kross to throw it away, and her yank on it, get Drew McIntyre off his feet so, you know, Kross could come in and, you know, start a little beat down on him early, get that heel heat built up a little bit early on. And I think I'm kind of in the middle with you. I enjoyed the ending. I'm, you know, I think I'm more of a fan of, you know, kind of endings like that than a lot of people are. Just because it's a win for everyone, because at the end of the day, Karrion Kross is a heel, and, you know, you're just like, damn, come in with the pepper spray, and, you know, like, I'm interested to see how this builds, but I feel like this is going downhill. You start with McIntyre and Kross involved with Roman Reigns and the title picture, and then it's like, McIntyre goes, gets his title shot, you know, he ends up losing. now he comes back for this rivalry. It does feel like a bit weird in the way that it's worked, to where McIntyre's the loser of the title match is circling back to Cross. And I think that that's kind of also giving it a feel like, okay, I mean, we don't want to give Karrion Kross a title shot like right out of the gate, because, you know, he's not the guy that's going to beat Roman Reigns. But, you know, you just don't want to lose any steam on him. And I get that. But it just feels, I guess, kind of forced is kind of what I would say, just with McIntyre and Kross.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. And like you were saying, I mean, you know, everyone was kind of tying back to Roman Reigns, especially with Karrion Kross, you know, and the story they were telling with, you know, Scarlett and all that, and, you know, Karrion Kross coming out and attacking Drew McIntyre, but Karrion Kross telling Roman Reigns that that wasn't a favor, that was a warning, or whatever he said. Yeah, it just kind of taken its own little backseat to everything, and I think that's kind of the only really downside to having Roman Reigns being on a part schedule, one, and two, having him be against Logan Paul at Crown Jewel. You know, so you're going to have those moments to where it doesn't really necessarily feel like everything's making sense. I think this was just kind of one of those matches that isn't necessarily going to make sense, but not everything has to, I guess.
Yeah, I'm okay with that in the long run, is kind of what I was going to say, because it just kind of feels like, yeah, Roman's already tied up with Logan Paul. It's almost like in the UFC, you know, like when somebody's not lining up necessarily, and so you kind of give them a, you know, different challenger in the meantime, you know. Mm-hmm. So, when is Crown Jewel? It's next month?
November 7th, something like that. Early November.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, we know who's going to win the match. So, right. I mean, you know, there's no point in really having it. But I'm sure Logan will do some good things, and I'm sure it'll be entertaining, and I'm sure, you know, Triple H will make it feel real, and who knows, maybe Bray Wyatt interferes in that match. I would assume he probably will. But
I think it's a good way to showcase Logan Paul without, you know, we don't expect anything. He's like a Jeff Hardy Undertaker match. Give him a chance to kind of show what he may be able to do for the company.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I mean, you do have somebody who has an immense amount of talent,
mm-hmm,
in him, and he's had two very good matches, but,
yeah,
you know, to put him in the third match of his career, basically, you know, against the best, in a lot of people's opinion, and maybe mine, the best wrestler in the world, you know, that's tough. But I think they'll work it fine. How did you feel about the fight pit? You know, and this story has been interesting to me, because Seth Rollins, and I don't know if you agree with me or not on this one, but Seth Rollins kind of feels like Chris Jericho in AEW right now.
I can see that.
In the sense of, he wins a lot, but it doesn't really make sense. In the Riddle rivalry, he wins a lot. It doesn't really make sense. It felt like he was going to win again tonight, but he didn't, luckily. Or for me, I think that makes the most sense. But he just kind of feels like Chris Jericho right now in AEW. You're kind of making him win, but it's not really getting him anything. I mean, Chris Jericho has the ROH title, but did he really need that? You know, I mean, so how do you feel about Seth in that overall match? I thought it was a cool match. I thought those two put the personality of the storyline in it pretty well. I thought DC was an interesting touch as the referee. You know, overall, you know, I'd say it was a good effort and a decent match, and something we haven't really seen on a WWE, you know, premium live event, quote unquote, level. But, you know, that was the main event of the show. And you kind of forgot that was the main event of the show. But, you know, that was it. And I don't know if that should have been, but again, like you said, there's no world champion on the show that night. So you put the hottest story at the end. Overall payoff, you know, just overall, how are you feeling about it? the payoff is what it should have been, but it just seems like there was something missing.
Yeah, I kind of feel you on that, because the fight pit was kind of meh for me. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I think I liked it. There was a few moments where it felt like it just kind of... I feel like the interactions with DC were a little forced and kind of weird. But for the most part, I mean, I enjoyed the match, I guess. It was just... it was an interesting way they did it, too, because the old fight pits, you remember, they were kind of up by the stage, over off on one side, and I liked how Riddle reverted to like an MMA fighting style. It definitely gave it a different feel. The fact that they took the ropes off was a very nice touch.
I did like that. I liked how they modified the ring to make it seem more real.
Yeah.
You know, that was a good touch, like you said. Yeah, I did notice that. And one of my favorite, my favorite spots was Riddle trying to literally murder Seth Rollins by choking him out from behind with the chain. Yeah. Or not with the chain, but choking him out while he was behind the chain.
While they were on the platform?
Right, yeah. And I think that spot wasn't working how it was supposed to, because Riddle let go fairly quickly.
Yeah.
It's because I think it was actually choking Seth out, because that would have been a hard spot to do without actually choking out Seth on accident. So, you know, Corey Graves sold that buckle bomb in the corner beautifully. You know, oh, thank God, you know, because it looked like Seth was going for the middle of the ring. And it went into the corner. And Corey Graves and Michael Cole, like you said, the go-ahead to give them personality and let them feel themselves more really has made a JR, Jerry Lawler, not as good.
Right. But uncomparable.
Feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying, definitely. Because it's... Like I said, Michael Cole reminded me of JR tonight. It was interesting, because I feel like I don't know, for some reason I feel like I don't buy into Michael Cole, and I feel like tonight I kind of like just broke that, because I thought of JR and I was just like, you know, some of the stuff that he called was like ridiculous, but it gave it a flair, you know, it gave it a different, you know, it gave it more, it you know, gave the moment more, and that's what Michael Cole is doing. And so I kind of like broke that of just like, it's Michael Cole. I feel like over the years he's been kind of goofy, the whole heel act and with him and Jerry Lawler and things like that. And my eyes just make me kind of weird, you know, weird on Cole. But yeah, tonight I feel like I've totally realized that. I'm like, this dude is on another level in his career right now and really adding, you know, a big, you know, level to the product.
He didn't want to be a coal miner?
Yeah, no, I was not into that at all.
Yeah, that was weird. It was, I don't know why they thought it would be a good idea to have a heel announcer, like an actual heel being announced. It was just right. It was weird, and you know, and he did his best with it, honestly. But yeah, Michael Cole felt like the 90s. Michael yeah. Cole felt like a 90s Michael Cole. He felt, you know, like he could do whatever he wanted. And maybe this is what it's going to be like going forward. And he's done a better job, I would say, since Triple H took over. But overall, you know, he made the, like you said, the I Quit match. I don't think people understand it as well if he doesn't sell everything there.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a job well done all around. And then we started off with it, but we'll kind of close with it too. You know, where does Bray Wyatt go from here? You know, what do they do? Obviously, there's still a lot of questions as to what in the world he's even doing anyway. But you know, where do they go from here? You know, what is step one in the return of Bray Wyatt?
To me, that's the toughest part, honestly, because what do you do? Do you kind of like throw him a bone of a match where it's like somebody, you know, he's going to beat, but to just kind of showcase him again. Is he going to talk? You know, I mean, obviously that's one of the, you know, best things he does is promo work. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, I think obviously he will, but I think it's really tough. Well, it's going to be interesting to see where they go with it. I mean, to me, I think that he could also go, you know, maybe a month of a couple of promos here and there and, you know, get some type of big match. I mean, I don't know what you book him in. Maybe he shows up next month at Crown Jewel like you were talking about in the Logan Paul match. I mean, what, maybe save him? I mean, January's kind of too far away to save him for the Rumble. And I don't necessarily think his gimmick is, you know, I don't know. He just doesn't seem like the guy I would see as winning the Royal Rumble, if that makes sense. I mean, he definitely could, just his character is going to go a different way about it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's...
Because it's personal to him, you know, like in his promo work.
Right, yeah, it's kind of Undertaker-esque. I mean, Undertaker winning the Royal Rumble doesn't really do anything.
Right.
You know, so it's tough to really figure out what he's going to do, you know, in the future, and who knows what they're going to go with for him and all these characters. Like I said, apparently he has a chance to do four different ones. Who knows what that's going to look like. It looks like, to me, they were ending the Firefly Funhouse, I would assume.
Yeah.
Just with everything being on fire. Is Alexa Bliss going to come back and be a part of it? You know, is there going to be more of a Wyatt family trend towards it? You know, is it a heel faction? Is it a face faction? You know, there's a lot of questions that we just don't know moving forward. But it's good to see the staples of wrestling in wrestling again.
Yes.
You know, and I wanted to say this real quick. We skipped over it, or we didn't skip over it, but we didn't mention it. How fucking good does Edge look in the ring still at however old he is at this point? It's almost like he didn't age a bit.
It's almost like all the years he was gone from WWE, he just stopped aging at that moment and then returned, and here he is.
Well, you know, it was just wild. I mean, he hit, what was it, four spears in a row?
Yeah.
And each one of them looked better, you know, than the one previously. And it just goes to show that, you know, and Daniel Bryan is doing it too in AEW, you know, with all these injured guys that were told that, you know, you're probably done, you're probably not going to wrestle anymore. They look better than they did when their injury took them away from the scene. You know, so who knows what they do to get them in that shape, but it's just so impressive, and wrestling is such an empowering thing because these guys can get injured and in their lives and careers and things of that nature. But when they come back and they wrestle how they do, it's almost forgetful in a way to show how tough it is to be at that peak and that point of your physical career for, you know, so many years.
It's a fact.
So overall, if you had to give this show a rating, what would you give it?
What's our scale we're going on?
Well, that's what I'm trying to grab, because everybody has a different scale. You know, so, I mean, we could do 1 to 10. We could do 4, you know, 1 to 5. We could do percentage, you know. If we're going off of percentages, you know, just off Bray Wyatt in general, you know, and all the action that was in it, there were definitely some moments that were missed. You know, I would give it a 93, you know, and maybe Bray Wyatt adds, you know, a 6% or 10% to that on a solid show. But, you know, the wrestling, in-ring wrestling was great. And there are definitely a lot of good moments in there. But the Bray Wyatt return adds 10% to any show you do. So, yeah, I would give it a 93, you know, 9.5, and then, you know, 5 out of 5. This was just another well-done pay-per-view by Triple H.
I absolutely agree with you. I think that right around A minus, maybe B plus. I would say you got to go with an A. You know, you said 93. Mm-hmm. I'd say right around that range. The same. You know, 9 out of 10. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking there was a little bit that kind of held it back, but for the most part, I mean, this is one of the most exciting events in recent memory, I feel. It reminds me of maybe like CM Punk, Darby Allin, just going off of, you know, recent memory, things like that, that were just such big moments. Cody coming back at WrestleMania, you know, just WrestleMania in general. I think that obviously that would probably, would the first night of WrestleMania at least, would definitely top this. But, you know, just with what this moment was and what it could lead to at this moment of, you know, it's midnight after the show and we're directly reacting to it. It is a game-changing event, you know, tonight.
It is, you know, it, like we talked about at the top of the show, Triple H took the ball and said, take it from me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I dare you. This was well done by Triple H. This was well done by everybody in WWE. It'll be interesting to see where they go from it. Really well. My dog's even excited about it.
Yeah. Giving it a 10 out of 10, huh?
Well, I mean, you know, what else do we have to look forward to? You know, other outside of Extreme Rules, and we have Crown Jewel coming up in November. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of spoilers in that. You're not going to have anybody really shock you in that, maybe other than a Bray Wyatt return or something of that nature. But, you know, what do you feel moving forward is going to be the goal of WWE, other than keeping AEW at bay, which I think they will more so? But do you feel, let me ask you this, do you feel like Aleister Black comes back to WWE?
Ooh, now that would be one I think that would be a very good return to bring in with Bray Wyatt and, you know, maybe deliver some type of faction with Bray or, you know, tag team. But I think, you know, kind of like you said, the goal, I think the biggest goal right now for WWE is to figure out the Roman Reigns situation. And that I just mean, how are you going to end the title reign? How are you going to, you know, because all good things must come to an end. And I think, you know, it is getting around the time to pull the trigger on that. And Bray may be your answer. I think that he probably is your answer. Do you split the belts back up? I think it's just figuring out what direction does Triple H want to take the company? Do you want to keep the... Because I know we're kind of at a point where it's like, there's a brand split, but we're back to that like kind of weird like early 2010s, like early to mid 2010s, where it was like everybody's on every show pretty much, but there's still two champions, you know, a champ per show. You know, before they, you know, put it together with John Cena and Randy Orton. But so I think it's really just go from there. And, you know, I think whatever they do is probably, at least right now, in the looks of it, going to keep AEW still arm's length away from them from really doing anything ratings wise. AEW is going to have to come, you know, back with it because they had a lot of dominoes fall, a lot of momentum rolling to get them to the point where they're at now, and now it's almost the exact opposite. WWE's really getting the ball rolling and really picking up steam and momentum, and Triple H has been a huge part of that, and I think just to capitalize on that is figure out where you're going, because we're in October now, you know, going into the big shows. You get to January, you got the Royal Rumble, and that leads you into WrestleMania. Survivor Series will be next month, obviously. So you have a lot of big stuff coming up that you could really do a lot of big things with. And, I think at the end of the day, it's just, again, figuring out with Roman Reigns, figuring out, are you going to, you know, re-split the titles? You know, is whoever is, you know, contending for the title going to be the one to take both of them? You know, are you going to have a couple different people take different belts, and just who is going to do it? Because I can't see Roman Reigns getting beat twice for both belts in, you know, a short span of time. Is the Bloodline going to fold? Paul Heyman, you know, I think the Bloodline and the belts are really the biggest, you know, topic if you're talking about, you know, where you're gonna go right now. Just because what, it's been 2 years now, over 2 years for Roman Reigns,
almost three, I think.
Yeah, that'll be what, at SummerSlam next year, three.
I think SummerSlam would put it at three. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah. Do you give Roman Reigns 3 years? I don't think you do. You know, I mean, unless if you're just hurting at that point with so many injuries, but I think once Cody Rhodes comes back, and apparently Cody Rhodes was not going to get a title even with his run, but that was still under Vince. So who knows what will happen with Triple H. But what do you do? You know, in that, you nailed it on the head. What do you do with Roman Reigns? You know, do you let him continue his two title reign? Do you give him one title and then somebody the other one? Or do you beat him in a winner-take-all situation and somebody else takes the other title and you do an actual brand split? I, you know, at this point, I don't really care for the brand split because, you know, it just gives me more options for the bigger stars on Monday and Friday nights. You know, it doesn't really necessarily mean anything at this point. You're just kind of getting the best wrestlers on the best show each night.
Yeah, I agree with the brand split thing. Just, I think the brand split is almost, it's like it's compelling when it happens, but then it's like you get a year or two into it. I think it just becomes like, who cares? And I don't know if that's maybe a booking problem, creative problem, or if it's just as fans, you know, we just don't care about it as much because I feel like, you know, what was that, early 2000s when they did the initial brand split? That was huge, really cool, interesting. And even when they did the brand split, you know, re-split the brands essentially a few years ago, what was that, like 2018, 20, before that maybe?
It was when Finn Balor made his main roster debut. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it was Foley and Stephanie, and then Shane and Daniel Bryan.
Yeah,
as a manager. So I can't 16, remember what 17, year that then? Was. But that's when they re-split everything into the actual competition of Raw versus SmackDown.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't even necessarily think they need to do that. They're not really having managers be a part of the show anymore.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's actually okay. You know, you think you kind of miss that aspect of it, but as you're watching it, you really don't necessarily need them, you know, or pay attention to them. The only ones that really you pay attention to, you know, were Teddy Long and, you know, Eric Bischoff. But outside of those, you know, you didn't really pay attention to them that much. You know, they didn't really have that big of an impact on the show.
Agreed.
So, a lot to unpack tonight, a lot to look forward to here in the future of WWE. You know, we'll wrap it up here, but real quickly, I guess we'll just kind of guess, and if we're right, we're right. Who is Bray Wyatt's first rivalry right out the bat?
Man. Ooh, that's an interesting one to tackle, I think. You know, after tonight, I wouldn't mind. I mean, I guess we'll see how Cross comes out of this, but if you were to make Bray Wyatt face, that would be an interesting, you know, kind of dark matchup to make. You know, both characters kind of share some of the same characteristics a little bit, and put Karrion Kross over in a way where, you know, obviously probably needs a win in between. But I think you could get by with that in a way where, again, it's like Cross is going to show himself off, but you know Wyatt is going to come in and win the matchup. Or Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins is another one that I think would be a really good idea to put with him. Get Seth Rollins out of the Riddle rivalry. And maybe, I mean, depending on where you're going to go with the character of Bray Wyatt, if the Fiend is going to show his face again or anything like that, Seth Rollins would be an interesting one just with the way that whole rivalry went and is just history with Bray Wyatt in general.
Well, he actually, that's a good point. He actually brought that up in the Ariel Helwani interview that Seth Rollins did with him. That is rivalry. He said he wanted another crack at, mainly because the Fiend character, in his words, was too hard to deal with, and not in a bad way. It was just hard to not make him look strong enough, right, was how Seth Rollins put it. And he basically said that he would rather have had him get squashed in Hell in a Cell than whatever the hell that ending was in that match.
It never ended. It's still going on.
Yeah, but he alluded to, obviously, that was not their call. Right. So I think we will get another crack at that, and that'll be good too. As far as it goes for me, I think an interesting one with Bray Wyatt, if you're going to make him face, you know, maybe you pick off the Judgment Day one at a time, but that's just such a hot act right now. I don't know if you really mess with that. So I think you put him at the in-betweener role and maybe put him up against a guy like Riddle. You know, now that Riddle has beaten Seth Rollins, you know, Riddle's going to take that next step. So that next step would be Bray Wyatt. You know, so why not put him against Bray Wyatt and see? I think those would be 2, 3, 4 really good matches right there.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. That would be a very interesting continuation of things for Riddle. What about if he came in and maybe he picks off the Judgment Day, but then he, you know, becomes the leader of the Judgment Day? It's like kind of what you do with Daniel Bryan.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that would make sense. Or maybe he's been the leader the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who knows? Behind the scenes thing. Somebody, I keep saying we'll end it here, but we will here in just a minute. Somebody sent a comment, a video that I thought was pretty funny. When they were doing all the White Rabbit or the White Rabbit videos and stuff like that, somebody made a comment that said, "Watch it be Vince McMahon with a hood that comes out and says it was me the whole time, you stupid idiots. It was me all along." And that would be the ultimate Vince McMahon middle finger. He was the White Rabbit the whole time.
That would be interesting. What a what a turn of events that would be.
Can you imagine how much heat he would get off of that?
The whole company.
Well, obviously, thank God, Vince McMahon is not the White Rabbit. But all in all, one of the biggest nights in wrestling ever. Bray Wyatt returns. Who knows what hell's characters coming our way. But a lot of exciting stuff. We'll be on top of it and continue it here with Wrestling in Kayfabe. Obviously, check out the blog that Papa Show is on top of and all that good stuff. And we will be writing and talking with more as big night for WWE, a big win for Triple H. Everyone digest this as much as they can. Sleep tight, and we will be on top of it. Wrestling in Kayfabe, we're out of here.